Recovering Queen, the Queen fan podcast where we talk about and play the songs we love with Jay, Matt, and Ian.
Welcome to Recovering Queen. It's week number six, and this week we have the game.
Play the game.
Play the game.
Do that again, Matt.
It's week six. Welcome to the Recovering Queen pod. It's week six. Welcome to the Recovering Queen podcast, where we cover a Queen song and then chat about a Queen song, the methods and the madness. And this week, it's going to be Play the Game. Welcome to my other two hosts, Jay and Ian. Matt. I'm Matt.
Good evening.
Matt, what's that voice? What is that voice? What are you doing?
It's radio announcer voice.
Oh, I see.
See what I've done.
Yeah, I've given up on the voice. I did it a little bit for the Origin podcast that will be coming out at some point. It sounds awful. I just sound awful. I've just let in 30 seconds. That's it. I'm not doing it.
What, of your radio voice?
Yeah.
Radio voice.
Exactly. So play the game then.
So Play the Game, week six. This is one of the songs that crosses over into the real world, doesn't it? Out of the Queen fan tracks that we've been doing so far, into the tracks that the general public know and love. So I guess it's the first one we've done that appeared on Greatest Hits number one.
Yeah, it is. Is it the first one we've done that's on a Greatest Hits album?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, what about Volume 3? Because I don't listen to Volume 3 all that much.
No. Is there a Volume 4? I dread to say it, but is that?
Don't think so. It then goes into the deep cuts, Queen Rocks type things, doesn't it?
So what number do you think Play the Game got to?
In the hit parade. It wasn't the first track. What was it? The third single off the album, wasn't it? Crazy Little Thing Called Love released in 79. Then there was another one. What was the? And then it came out after that. So it's probably quite low. Maybe top 30, 25.
They had two number ones in America. They had Crazy Little Thing Called Love, followed by another one, Bites the Dust, which was one of the biggest selling singles of all time. So Play the Game was the third single.
To number 14.
In the UK.
Yeah.
That's respectable for a third single.
Not bad, is it? The album, of course, went to number one, didn't it?
And how?
Yeah. Was Crazy Little Thing Called Love a single in the UK?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that went to number one.
Not in this country.
Number two, wasn't it?
Yeah, they haven't had many number ones, apart from I Want It All and Bohemian Rhapsody.
Didn't Innuendo the single get the number one?
Oh, and Innuendo, yeah, Innuendo, yeah, 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 for a week.
Yeah, and then Bohemian Rhapsody twice.
Yeah,
Or was it thrice?
Actually, it might have been thrice, yeah.
Yeah, because of the Wayne's World phenomenon. Yeah.
But I still maintain it's a very curious choice for them to release as a single. It's a really odd song construction. The chorus kicks in after like two lines of the verse. The chorus lyrics change every time. There's like two guitar solos, a really weird synthy bit, and then repeat to fade. It's a odd song construction. Did you find that it was very strangely put together, Jay?
I didn't notice that at all. It was only when you said, I thought, I think you were saying, what song is this? What is this song? And then I started thinking, what even genre is it? I think it's sort of like a ballad. But it's I don't know. It's Freddie's voice. For me, Freddie's voice is so beautiful in it. He's so searching, isn't he? He's looking back on that relationship that he had. And it's, I don't know, so all I hear is the emotion in Freddie's voice. I don't hear anything else. And it's just melodic. But you're right. It's odd. When you take it apart, it's like, yes, where's this going? But it works. It works.
Well, it does work. Yeah.
Don't you think it's a bit like, you know, we were talking when we were looking at Sail Away Sweet Sister and how that was a May template ballad. It's a cookie cutter ballad of May's. I think that Play the Game is the start of the cookie cutter ballads by Freddie Mercury. In other words,
don't you think more of a continuation?
What's it a continuation of? What comes before it?
I would say its close relative would be something like Jealousy. that kind of piano-y ballad.
Yeah, but
and
Jealousy
almost,
is...
It's the same kind of arrangement as Don't Stop Me Now, as in very piano-heavy, not much for Brian to do until
no,
he
but
gets
it's,
later
yeah,
on.
But Don't Stop Me Now is a rocker, and Jealousy is like a weird little kind of... If you think about things that are genuinely cousins to one another are Play the Game and It's a Hard Life and Keep Passing the Open Windows.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
A lot of those ones. He sort of gets into that mold, doesn't he, of going, I'm just going to sit at the piano and do these like really simple songs. Because it is a simple song. I know it's you're saying it's a little bit weird, but it is still verse, chorus, verse, chorus.
Yeah, it's very weird. It's just so beautifully executed, isn't it? And, and everyone sings along to the guitar break and you're singing along with it from, from beginning to end. I mean, that's the thing. It just grabs you and takes you in and just takes you on that melancholic journey in a way.
It's a good feel, isn't it? The band have played it very, very well. As you can tell, they've gone in the studio and played it really, really well. I love Roger's...
It a lot, haven't they?
Yeah. I love Roger's hi-hat near the end where he picks up the pace and he gets that double-time hi-hat. It's beautiful.
Yeah, he picks it up in the middle eight bit as well, doesn't he? The drums really start ramping up at that point.
Yeah.
And then at the end where, yeah, the double hi-hat thing, it's just such a great feel.
And again, John Deacon's really, really good on it.
The bass line was just, that was one of my favourite bass lines to learn.
I've got to commend you, Jay, for doing the bit in Brian May's solo where John Deacon goes up high as well, the doo-doo-doo, halfway through Brian May. So it's ace. It's so good.
And he knows exactly when to keep it low as well, as ever, Deaky, on that one. It's one of his best performances.
Yeah, well, it's one of the poorest ones on Greatest Hits. Can we say that?
I'm not going to go there. No, not going to do that.
Not poorest. Okay, probably one of the least famous off Greatest Hits. It's not like a We Will Rock You or a We Are the Champions or a Bohemian Rhapsody or Another One Bites the Dust. It's one of the lesser known greatest hits, isn't it, really?
It is.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But it's Freddie's song, is it? Have we done any Freddie songs so far in this series?
Yeah, just the one, Death on Two Legs.
Total Freddie, yeah. So I would have put this down, five semitones, six semitones? I can't remember now.
It's five,
It's so high. It's so high. Said it before, you cannot do a Freddie. It's impossible. It's even high, five semitones down.
Yeah. And isn't it octave jumps as well, or ninth or 11th jumps, the first one? It's a major seventh jump and then an octave jump, isn't it? It's just astonishing what he does.
Well, do you know what? I went through and I had a look at, you can get some software, can't you, where it tells you if you're going flat or sharp. And I had a look at it and I was really, really pleased with my take. And I went through it and I think every note was out. It was either sharp, flat. It was impossible to sing perfectly in tune. And I don't know, I think, again, is that because of the dexterity of the vocal performance, that it's moving around a lot? I don't know.
I think the difference between a singer that sounds like really spot on, like Freddie Mercury, particularly in that era, is the fact that, yes, his vocal cords are so in exercise, as it were. It's like when you go to hit a note, you get there very quickly. I mean, that's the thing I've noticed. Obviously, I've been doing the same thing as you, going into Melodyne and looking at my vocal performance and seeing how quickly it takes my vocal to get to the note that I want it to go to. And even if you're hitting the note, it's amazing how it's like your throat muscles are sort of almost getting there and you just get in. I look at yours, and yours is far better than mine. So yours, you're getting into tune much quicker and it's much more solid. So yeah, I mean, it's a very good way to learn how to sing, because you realize it's a lot about listening as well. It's listening to the vocal and going, am I actually going up to the notes mentally? Am I doing it? As in, it's okay just singing, but are you actually hitting the notes? And then when you listen to it, it's like, no, I'm not. And then you've got to actually get there and get better.
That's really interesting.
Have we ever put Freddie into Melodyne and had a look to see what he's actually doing?
No, but I have got some Freddie stems. Yeah, we should do that.
But would they have had anything like that?
No,
they wouldn't have had anything like that.
No.
And that is pure Freddie magic.
I tell you actually something that I know Queen fans and even myself don't like to admit. But remember when Queen brought out a video called Queen, We Will Rock You, right? And it was essentially the same thing that Live in Montreal is, right? I've got that video, and Freddie isn't perfectly in tune all the way through that concert, right? And back in the 80s, you wouldn't have noticed it. But now, because everyone is so used to hearing in-tune vocals because of Melodyne and all the other bits of software that do it, it's the Live in Montreal, they've definitely gone in and pitch corrected his vocals, which is great because it sounds amazing. Mm. But don't kid yourself into thinking that any of that stuff is actually live, really.
Interesting.
I think, if memory serves, I remember reading something from Brian about that show, that they were very frustrated with it at the time, that they hadn't started the tour yet or something, or it was 2 weeks after the end of a tour, rather than filming something right in the middle of a tour when they're absolutely on fire. They came at that particular show pretty cold, so they were always quite disappointed with the performance.
I don't know why, because
always sounded great to me.
Live in Montreal, I think, is my favourite live DVD.
You know,
and that is the sort of game era, isn't it? I mean, this is that era, isn't it?
And you know, there's nothing wrong in being slightly out of tune at times. It's for me, it sometimes adds to it. I know I was listening to an Alicia Keys track. I can't remember what era that was, about 5-6 years ago. And that was like a radio single. And I was listening to it and thinking, yeah, this is out of tune in places.
It's funny you should say Alicia Keys, because I have actually had this conversation, because I was watching the Netflix program about songwriting. And Alicia Keys, she doesn't use auto-tune. And it's really rare. But also, the reason why I found this out is because I was asking a friend, saying, why is it that Alicia Keys doesn't seem to have got better at singing? I swear she was better when she first hit the scene. And it's like, I don't know. And maybe it's because I'm so used to people using auto-tune now that without it, it's like everything sounds a little bit out.
Well, I mean, that's my point really was that I still really liked it, because I figured that she really liked the take. It got the emotional content over what she was singing. And it was like, yeah, it's not perfect. That's who I am. That's what I've done today. It feels right.
And maybe you're absolutely right that those pitch imperfections and tempo imperfections are actually what makes some of the older records great to boomers like us three.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So talking about the live DVDs and everything, the game was released on the 24th of June, 1980, straight out on tour to the US. First performance of Play the Game on the 30th of June quickly became a live favourite. I thought it's an absolutely brilliant version they did. So it's quiz time. How long did it last in the set?
It couldn't have lasted more than 6 years. That's for starters.
Any advance on they played it right up until 1986? They didn't, by the way.
No.
Out of the set.
Game was dropped out of the set after...
To make way for the work, surely. 83, 84.
Yeah, because he would have done... Yeah, because he would have started singing It's a Hard Life instead.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So it did the Game tour and the Hot Space tour, played every night on those two. Firm live favourite, 144 performances. And the last performance, beginning of November in Japan on the Hot Space tour. And then, it wasn't heard of again. But happily, they do it with Queen plus Adam Lambert. So it kind of retains, you know, a big part of the set there.
That's nice. Tell us about the Oberheim synthesizer that you were trying to recreate.
Okay. So we should say this is the first time every single Queen album up until this point had had no synthesizers written on it, right? And so some people demarcate Queen catalog to the no synth period and the post synth period. And the game, of course, is the first of the post synth period. And so Play the Game is the very first track with a synthesizer on it. And it is the Oberheim OBX.
Or is it? Now, I've got a question for you.
Okay, yeah.
Because there were two recording sessions. The game, Play the Game, was recorded in the second of the two recording sessions. So in the first recording sessions, we've got Sail Away, Sweet Sister,
which has a string sound in it.
So I argue that first synthesizer on any Queen track was Sail Away, Sweet Sister.
But the first to be heard by the public.
The first to be heard, yes, absolutely.
And weren't Queen working on the Flash soundtrack at the time as well?
They probably were, because he's wearing a Flash t-shirt in the video, isn't he, for Play the Game?
Yeah, and in fact, he wore a Flash t-shirt in the video while it was still secret that they were working on the soundtrack.
Is that right? Excellent. If I remember the video to Play the Game, it's not particularly inspired, is it? Isn't it just them miming in front of a blue screen?
Yeah, well, it is, isn't it? Because there's loads of fire and clouds and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, it's on a stage. Yeah, it's in a studio, isn't it? Mm. It's in a TV studio with their...
something to do with Brian May's throwing his guitar about or something.
Yeah, maybe. So he's got a Fender Stratocaster, although it's not. It's a Satellite Stratocaster. And get this, my very first guitar was a Satellite, just because that Brian May connection. I didn't know it was a Satellite and Brian had a Satellite until it was all too late.
Presumably he didn't play that on the track.
No, he did it because he had to throw the guitar across the video. There's a bit where Freddie throws him the guitar.
He wasn't comfortable using the Red Special for that.
No. Funnily enough, it was like, no, I don't want to do it.
No, don't drop it. See, it's funny what you get out of a video, because when I watched it, I just remember the bit of Freddie jumping backwards in slow motion onto the drum kit.
It's a terrible, terrible
effect.
It's a terrible effect. It's a rubbish video.
Oh, yeah, but
really?
At the time, I mean, can you imagine?
At the time.
That would have blown people's minds. They're like, how are they doing this?
2 years before Thriller.
Yeah, good point.
So the Oberheim OBX, was that the very cutting edge of polyphonic synthesis at the time? Or was it just what Mac had in his studio or something?
I believe it's one of the very first polyphonic synths.
Is it?
So things like the Moog were monophonic. So you couldn't play chords and stuff.
And hopelessly out of fashion in 1980.
Yes. The Oberheim was one of the very first. And it sounds amazing. It sounds absolutely amazing.
Those synths still sound great, don't they?
Yeah. The Oberheims really do. They're just really, really good. Getting your fingers on the synth is so important, as I found. Jay got me to do the synth bits and... yeah, to do them in software is actually really difficult, because you kind of need the actual physical manipulation of a synth. Have your fingers on the portamento and have your fingers on...
that synth is all knobs and turners and dials and stuff, rather than just a screen and a load of automation, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's all knobs. It's still an analog instrument. It's just that it's able to play polyphonic.
But did you have a sample of an Oberheim then?
So I've got an Oberheim plugin, but I ended up to do the deep dives and things and pitch shifting up. I ended up using a vinyl plugin to pretend to basically play the note, press the stop on the vinyl, then the vinyl goes slows down. Then copy that to audio, then reverse it so it goes like that. And that's kind of gives that effect.
Ah. Is that what they did in the studio then? Is that initial sample? Reversed, or is that played on the synth to sound weird with some weird ADSR or whatever?
There's definitely reverse stuff in there. I was listening to it and you can definitely hear something reverse in there. So it's not just a synth. There's other noises in there, particularly at the beginning. But no, I think it's more, in the middle, it's definitely just sort of portamento stuff. But I don't know, actually. They've stacked it up and been very, very clever with it.
Right. Possibly why it stood the test of time so well then. Still sounds good, because it's not the pure synth. They've meddled with it in some way.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And it's such a weird interjection. It's almost like, oh, we've got a synth. We better use it on this track. But apparently Freddie loved it. Apparently, up until that point, Freddie didn't want anything to do with it. But as soon as the as soon as he was given that O behind OBX, it was like, we can do
and
something.
And he never looked back, did he, actually, from then on?
No, well, he started like playing piano less and less. And he started playing synths less and less. He was just more, he just wanted to be the bloke that ran around as a frontman, didn't he?
Yeah. There's another first time on this single. Do you know what it is?
Ooh,
another first time.
Mm. It's the first time that Freddie comes out with his now infamous moustache on the cover.
Ooh.
First time.
Oh, that's a great one.
Mm. Yeah, that is quite good.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And
yeah,
the Queen fans were not, well, some of them were not that happy and sent him Bic razors in presumably.
Is that right?
Yes, presumably to get him to shave it off.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's how times have changed.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I'm guessing that the first time I heard Play the Game would be Greatest Hits. I remember getting that album Christmas that year. And obviously saying, oh, my God, this is all the same band, but I've loved all these tracks. I can't believe they're all, you know.
Yeah. Queen's Greatest Hits is just absurd.
Oh, it's phenomenal, isn't it?
It is just, yeah, I mean, it's potentially the best album of all time, except you're not allowed to have Greatest Hits in your favourite albums, especially post Alan Partridge.
Yeah, no, you're not.
I did like the bit though where Ian was saying, oh, this song it's great, but it's so weird. And then Matt said, there is Bicycle Race on the album as well. And then you're like, yeah, what is going on there?
That was it. Ah, touche. Yeah. Fair play.
Yeah, Bicycle Race as a single really does take the biscuit.
Odder.
Well, lyrically, it's him looking back at a relationship that's been over. It hasn't worked for whatever reason. I can't remember the guy's name. Was it Tony somebody? But who he had a relationship with. And again, I think that's why you were saying about it's the cousin of like a few other tracks, because they're reflective songs of Freddie looking back at a relationship that unfortunately hadn't worked out, and I guess being pretty sad about it and trying to work it out in his own head.
And I guess this is written before he eventually found love later in life, isn't it? So he's still on his own searching at this point.
What was the B-side? What's the B-side?
Oh, no, I know this. I've heard this once.
It's that Roger one, isn't it?
Yes.
It's
A Human Body.
A strange, very Taylor.
Yeah, I've got a strange feeling that A Human Body will be probably one of the very last tracks we do for Recovering Queen. Or maybe Mad the Swine might come after it. I don't know.
Yeah, we're not going to be doing them all, are we?
Well, we're going to have to.
What? This is the first time hearing about it.
Well, we can't start repeating them.
Doing covers of our covers. It's like it becomes Recursive Queen.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, I mean, I really love the song. But also, there's not many Freddie songs that you can do, and it was just about doable. And that in itself is appealing to even get anywhere near on something like a Freddie song. Because I think that's what we were finding, wasn't it? We're doing a lot of Brian May songs and a few Rodgers, but actually we can't go near the Freddies because they're just too blinking hard.
And I think we've avoided doing the huge songs like the ones off Greatest Hits because to us and to many Queen fans, the kind of the deeper cuts are perhaps the more interesting ones that, you know, we haven't heard quite so much. And there's just perhaps a bit more to think about and a bit more to talk about.
Play the Game is a great song, isn't it? But it clearly doesn't have the complexity and technical prowess of Bohemian Rhapsody. I mean, let's face it, to do a cover of Bohemian Rhapsody, take the best part of a couple of months.
Yeah.
whereas doing Play the Game, yeah, you know, if you were on your game, you could do it quite quickly, couldn't you?
Not saying we won't do it, listeners. If you want us to do Bohemian Rhapsody, do get in touch with us on the Twitter at Recovering Q. And if you say Bohemian Rhapsody, if we get enough people saying Bohemian Rhapsody, we will do a cover of Bohemian Rhapsody. Now, I really think that Play the Game is up there with the very best thing that Queen ever did. It's rightly placed on Greatest Hits. It's a fantastic tune. Everyone plays a blinder. Even if it is a bit weird construction-wise, it's just a fantastic song. It's got everything that makes Queen the best band in the world.
And round about that time, they probably were the biggest band in the world, weren't they?
I mean, yeah, they really were, just for that moment. You're absolutely right. When they released Play the Game as a single, they were the biggest band on the planet. Yeah, really were.
So don't forget, listeners, as ever, you can get in touch with us on the Twitter at RecoveringQ. We've also got the website recoveringqueen.co.uk. And don't forget to click that subscribe button on the iTunes, and then you'll get every episode that we're going to do, all 189 of them, eventually. But here it is, the 1980 classic, Play the Game.
Open up your mind and let me step inside. Rest your weary head and let your heart decide. So easy, when you know the rules, it's so easy. All you have to do is fall in love, play the game. Everybody play the game of love, yourself go. This is your life. Don't play hard to get. It's a free world. All you have to do is fall in love. Play the game. Everybody play the game. Oh. My game of love has just begun.